mind, though, if you call me Tamara. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Okay. Exodus. The tree felt empty because the owl left, and the music of the pines was trimmed by a chainsaw into only two notes played with the vibrato. The grass burned up from Roundup. It hadn't felt right for years. The seeds went on strike for new potting soil. All the oceans were filled with oil, and the waterbirds said, "Why have you forsaken me?" They said this to the bumblebee because God left town with all the animals and people tossed in a suitcase. There were only half a dozen. The bumblebee is the only one left of his generation. He taught the pines the vibrato, and he only does solos. The fields begged for a plow. The sky did not know how. The wind was scarred by chemicals, and the periodic table collapsed. The orchid said, "We'll try to start over." The roses stared in disbelief. The weeping willow was too filled with grief to cry anymore. But you heard all this before. So why don't we just skip this chapter and not waste the paper? At this, the audience laughed out loud because the forest had a bad reputation for being pimped out for paper. And the poets, hiding in caves, forgotten by God, felt ashamed of using so much. There was no more peyote to help them find a vision. The devil was proud and sent an ever-darkening cloud to dim the sun who had been long set to run anyway and so bid goodbye to the lullabies she had learned. Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. The sand was the only one concerned. The rain didn't even feel like coming around. The Puget lost its sound. The shrubs drew swords. We'll fight till the end. The moon had its doubts. And a rumble came from the belly of the black holes. Thank you. So this poem goes hand in hand with another one. In a work that I'm probably be doing all my life called Earth Gospel. It celebrates the earth and its various creatures. I'm in love with animals, so I write a lot about animals. You'll hear a lot about that tonight. So the next bit, though, is coming from a character in Earth Gospel called Tomcat. And Tomcat is, he's a, you know, kind of a fellow with a shady past who at one time would call women dames, you know, that kind of thing. But now he's been, like, entranced by a whippoorwill. He's kind of like calling for this whippoorwill, which is sort of out of his, you know, his type. Anyway, so this is his, it was his Exodus. He was telling us the Exodus, and here it is now, next part. Thus spake the prophet Tomcat, who had come to warn the people, but got caught up in the sound of a whippoorwill, whom he found to be quite lovely. He gave up prophecy for evangelism. And so it shall be that the Exodus will come to pass if the people fail to change. They must fall in love with the earth immediately. They must praise her all the day long. They must build temples in her honor. At one time, the Nile was worshipped as a god, and the poets glorified her. Langston Hughes said, "I've known rivers." Melissa Steffi said, "The Choptank River is a living river. Thousands swim, fish and crab in her depths." The sun was adored as well and written and sung about. Andrew Park said, "A glorious orb is the sun. Who shall describe his flame?" "I shall describe his flame," said Tomcat, the evangelist and true poet. The flame of the sun starts in a distant green country. It never bows to anything or anyone. The flame of the sun erupts in fertile lava as a result of his lovemaking. The flame of the sun catapults energy southward and inward and falls on altars and burns them up. The flame of the sun is a supreme priest and a pharaoh bent on making history. The flame of the sun says she is smoke and ash, fire and brimstone, and I love her. The flame of the sun kisses the feet of the earth and unbinds them and bids them walk. The flame of the sun illuminates King Tut's tomb and unwraps him so that his gold face gleams and he becomes a god. The flame of the sun puts everyone in the middle kingdom with lion, crocodile, and hippopotamus. The flame of the sun enlightens a culture and impregnates poems. The flame of the sun survives in art and architecture and makes every day holy. The flame of the sun is rekindled in community with the candle keepers in the monasteries and bars and creativity salons. The flame of the sun is cyclical and harmonious and perfectly in tune every time. Thus said Tomcat, also known as Ka and Ba a person's double, a spiritual ram, a spiritual entity, to his whippoorwill, who grew silent. Did you enjoy the reading? My friend Melissa telling me 5 minutes. Okay, so another Earth Gospel poem, Transformation, a Fox Tale. Born a fox, fox in the hen house, fox hound, fox trot, a slow flowing dance, three step, feather step, natural turn. Silver fox, crazy like a fox, fox on the run, slick like a fox, quick like a fox, hide in plain sight like a fox, whiskey, tango. Hunted like a fox, out of breath, got to get somewhere, got to get under it, got to go deep. Fox when chased for fur or fun, fox in flight, chased by dog or horse. Red fox, brown fox, quick brown fox jumps, fox in the night. In Japanese literature, elite and folk, the fox is often a shapeshifter, a symbol of transformation and duplicity. The rice god Inari has fox servants and is said to be a fox himself. Kitsune, the outsider. Miyobu, celestial fox. Nobitsune, wild fox. In one of the traditional Japanese stories, a man shoots a fox with an arrow, wounding it, but is unable to catch it. And on his way home, he sees it running past him with a flaming brand in its mouth, and it sets his house on fire. In another story, a man saves the life of a vixen who later visits him, explaining that she's only temporary human, and offers herself as his brief concubine. Sin, he thinks, and says no, whereupon he hears this song, the hat thou lovest, reed wove, tricked out with damask, ah me, hath blown away. And the fox is free to become fully human, and she leaves the man behind. Aesop's fox, who said he doesn't want grapes, never did, after he couldn't reach them. In several illustrations of this scenario, the fox first walks back and forth, admiring the alluring grapes on the vine. It's the same with a man who loves a woman, only as long as she loves him. And after that, begins to call her names and say he never loved her at all. Foxglove, splendid purple flower bells with speckled throats, highly toxic, also called digitalis. All this I offer on the word of the fox. I love the fox, I love the coyote, all the ones that are a little bit wicked tricksters. Okay, so another creature, the lightning bug, the firefly, you might call it, I don't know what you call it in Ireland, but okay, firefly, lightning bug. To me, it's a romantic little creature, you know. So this is called When My Lover's Eyes Flash. When My Lover's Eyes Flash. In my hand, a jar of lightning. Lampyridae beetles, small catalytic machines whose larvae emit light. Summer climate bioluminescence, color tuning, green and yellow. Caution, go, a luciferous flashlight to attract and to repel. Insect evolution, excitation energy, kinetics. And in a rare event, male synchronous fireflies and blue ghost fireflies will blink in unison. 6 to 8 flashes and then stay dark for a few seconds, making a kind of laser light across the forest. Laser physics uses the term speckle to refer to a pattern made by a beam of light reflected on a surface such as paper, an optical interference, spectral, an illuminated spot, dot, or dash, unwanted. But for the speckle-winged rangeland grasshopper, a method of concealment. Its wings speckled dark, its underside pale yellow-green, translucent. Grasshoppers, too, know how to fly when they need to, when you are reaching out a hand to try to hold them, try to grab them. Did you know holding a firefly will eventually make it stop glowing? Van Gogh.
Yeah.
Okay. I like the painting called Sower with Setting Sun. Do you remember that one? The crows, the man's in the field, and he's like sowing some of the seeds. So this is the Nick Frasis poem to that painting, to go with that painting. Sower with Setting Sun. With the last few silent seeds sown in late sun, the sower, brow beaded in sweat, heeds dusk. Praise that where the dark seeds grow, they grow free from greedy weeds, and he grows free from worries and deeds that need doing. At quickened speed, he daydreams of a woman who knows his days are thorny and thinks to meet thorns means one may someday greet the roses, but the roses do not grow in these rows. No, he knows this. They grow in finely sown rows, he supposes, where roses grown by fancy gardeners grow, and he no fancy gardener. But a sower of dark seeds, dark burgeoning seeds that feed the ones who read by lamplight stories of secret gardens. Into those gardens she leads the scented woman he knows, and even he who can't read reads well enough the woman and her needs. He vows to read her more closely than she thinks a man with dirt-stained hands can, and bring roses in those hands from the garden he has planned. It is no secret garden. It grows the way his heart grows, unthwarted and broken ground, hardy, not temperamental, waiting only on the sun to come, untroubled by weeds. That poem always makes me cry. I don't know why. I love that one. Okay, I'm going to do one of the poems that got me here in the first place, one of the 5-word international poetry contest poems. And this is called Minor Deities, and it's a true story. We were at Hilton Head. I'd heard the resident blue heron at our rented townhouse pond was choking on a rope that would almost surely die. A vet had been summoned. I began to pray to provoke a distant God into relinquishing his unsufferable hold on life for this 1 hour to spare the great bird. In regular life, in the comings and goings, I wear a face of proud intellectualism, make fun of the absurdities of religion, say all pass the same to whatever glory, whatever neoclassic nirvana we may find at the end, but for the minor God knotted up in the throat, outside, I turned to my own ways and muddled through a murky intercession. I do not know how it turned out. We left that place that day before I learned for sure whether either God would live on. Okay, this is a quick one, Odd Bird. The ostrich cannot curtsy, it cannot flirt, despite its fine eyelashes, or take to flight. Neither does it have a crest. At best, it skirts and lurches, protests, and curt bird curses the work of turning eggs and nested dirt stashes. Imagine its delight to discover that an ostrich lover looks for speed and stride, and neither one likes, in fact, to hide. Okay, a very strange poem. I'm going to start it, and you're going to say, she's going there. Yes, I am. Okay. You're familiar with the sort of Middle Ages, medieval idea, maybe even the Greeks, that women who were acting out or who were troubled or who were hysterical, it was because of what, ladies? You remember? Their uterus.
Yeah,
they said that their uterus was wandering. So I love this concept. I love it. So anyway, this is called My Uterus Did Not Wander. Okay. It's in several sections. I'll just walk through them.
No pun intended.
Yeah. I had a poem about my uterus, but it was taken out. Traded for my tonsils, I guess, which I kept, along with my ovaries, although they have almost retired from egg farming. The fact is, my ovaries are as confused as my hormones. They live together, but they never really talk. And both are anticipatory. They don't deliver, or they show up moody. My uterus never wandered. It wandered. Where did those two babies go? And how did I get so lucky to keep the one who stayed? My uterus was enlarged. Of course it was. What the hell? It wanted to take over. It wanted to be bigger than life. My uterus lay awake at night wondering what I did wrong to only be able to bring to life one perfect human being. I laughed because clearly my uterus was an imbecile. That's not nice. My uterus was differently able. It cried in blood and fibrous longings too much, too often. It hurt me, and I felt like it did so on purpose. I deeply resented my uterus for its selfishness, its cruelty. My uterus apparently felt that I had done it some injustice, or that it had done me one, and between us there was always this reckoning, and I was glad when it was over. The doctor gave me a photo of my uterus. It was strange, but I showed it to other people as if, my God, anyone wanted to see it. Like this, on the outside, exiled. My father's mother had a uterus. She kept him in it, although it was uncomfortable. Not for him, not for a long time anyway, and he wasn't quite sure he wanted out, especially when he saw that, like Jesus, he had no crib for his bed, and frankly, no father in the flesh, always in the sky and somewhere. His mother saw him looking up and called the adoption agency. He got a father later, a man whose wife had an argumentative uterus. They picked him out at the Kansas City cradle. He called that woman mother for a while. She took her uterus to California and never saw it again. Today we looked at the original uterus, the first. It smiled shyly at us from dark eyes in a 1941 high school yearbook, thanks to Ancestry DNA, which had kept it like a secret poem. Okay, so I'm going to do Nomads. I think I'll finish up with this one. This is for my daughter. I have a wonderful 27-year-old daughter. Makes me proud every day. But we're not. We see each other a lot. Okay, Nomads. In the night sky, Arabs see Al-Awaid, the mother camels, a pattern of stars that seem to gather around a calf and protect her from hyenas. In the life before this one, daughter, I might have carried you for just over a year and delivered you to your first slow, searing desert breaths. The camel mare is the only mammal who does not clean her infant after birth, nor bite through the umbilical cord. Another cord binds me to you. It runs from brainstem to lumbar region with nerve roots, dorsal roots, ventral roots, the peripheral butterfly column, and the cauda equina, horse's tail. Motor supply for the perineum that brought you into light in late September, a desert sunflower, your eyes dolly blue to gift me my happiest autumn. A calf is born with eyes open. Did you know camels always face the sun? Sunshine in my eyes can make me cry. Their lovely long eyelashes and their tears protect their eyes from sand and grit and blindness. We were nomads in that other life. Maybe that is why I do not see you as much as I would like. But we are bound to each other nonetheless. You'll find me waiting in Al-Awaid, even at the dawn of my next life. Thank you, guys.